Sylvia and me.
Today's podcast is sponsored by Upper Deck, the national full-service virtual gym that has reinvented the at-home workout experience. Upper Deck has more than 30 strength and cardio classes a week. Named Best Fitness Club in the Gold Coast for 2020, Upper Deck brings the gym to you with live coaching and motivation. Upper Deck's unique classes are interactive. They have two coaches, one leading your workout and one keeping her eyes on you, providing feedback and encouragement in real time. For a free week of unlimited virtual classes with no strings attached, email info@upperdeckfitness.com and let Upper Deck know you're a Sylvia and Me listener. Hi, I'm Sylvia Beckerman. Join me today as I talk to an extraordinary woman who is changing the world by making a difference in her life and the lives of those around her.
Hi, my name is Martina Kwan. I'm a three-time champion race car driver, a transformational coach for women, and an award-winning business founder and entrepreneur. Welcome to Sylvia and Me. Thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited to be here.
Martina, I am excited to have you here with me. And this is great. So yes, you are an award-winning race car driver. You're one of the things you missed, you're a war survivor. You're an award-winning business founder and entrepreneur. You're a speaker and transformational coach, and I'd like to get into that. You've also worked for some of the world's best companies and successfully founded two award-winning companies, an Emmy and Telly Awards for production management. I mean, there's not a lot that you haven't done, and I'm sure there's more to come. What I'd like to do is really start off with your backstory. Okay. You know, because one of the things that I said is you're a war survivor. You look too young to have survived any wars that I know of. So why don't you tell us a little bit about your backstory?
Okay, so as a child, we moved from Hong Kong to Beirut, Lebanon. And that was in 1974, and I was 8 years old. And at first, it was a really beautiful country set along the Mediterranean Sea, and 1 hour away would be mountains in the backdrop. It was really a phenomenal place. That was before the war started. So I actually have really good memories and some bad memories. So, you know, there were so many positive memories, like going to the beach club with the saltwater pool by the Mediterranean Sea as a child. And then our parents would send us to a pretty strict camp in the ski resort an hour away. And I remember waking up every morning at 6 singing the Lebanese national anthem. And there was also the American University of Beirut near where we lived. And so we would walk there and pass a monkey along the way. And then we would become expert cypress tree climbers. And I also remember driving to school on the school bus, and the school bus driver would stop and we would get a Lebanese delicacy called manoushi. So there were really some really wonderful memories. And then the war started. And that was when we were no longer able to cross through the Muslim and Christian neighborhoods to get to our school. So what my sister and I did is we would have to collect our homework from the German embassy, and we would roller skate there and jump steps at a time. And it was kind of crazy that as 8 and 10 year old kids, we were able to do that and have so much freedom. But the thing is, when day turned to night, that's when things changed. At nighttime is when the machine gun would start in the distance. And as soon as I would hear it, I would wake up, and I shared a room with my sister, Veronica. And the impending fear was pretty unbearable. And I remember every night crawling out of my bed and climbing up into her bed. She was 2 years older. And she was kind of my lifesaver. I mean, I honestly don't know what I would have done without her being there. Of course, my mom and stepdad and my younger sister were there, but my younger sister was an infant still. But so we would sit in huddled with my sister in her bed waiting for the bomb sirens to go off. And at that point, all our neighbors, because we lived on the ground floor, would come down, and we used our corridor, interior corridor, as a bomb shelter, and we would all sit huddled across from each other and just waiting for the gunfire, bombs, and rockets to go off. I mean, it was quite a traumatic time, and I never knew how much till last year, four decades later, when I was asked to drive the Saline S1 race car for the first time. And I thought actually throughout my life that my relative bravery and fearlessness was really attributable to living through war. I felt pretty fearless throughout my life until last year.
All right, we'll get into that in a second. That is amazing. I'm sure that had a huge impact on your life going forward. How old were you when you left Lebanon?
So I was 10 and my sister was 12. Yeah.
And where'd you go from there?
So we left and we moved to Germany, Hamburg, Germany, which is my mom's hometown, which was a wonderful reprieve. And thanks to our neighbors and family, we basically left with our suitcases through gun checkpoints. And when we arrived, we were able to have the help from family and friends, and they provided us with furniture and food and a car. And it was really wonderful to see the community coming together for us. And we thought we were going to go back, but the war didn't end for over a decade later.
Okay. And you're in California now. How many more steps did you take from Germany to California?
Quite a few. We moved quite a few times. So after Germany, we moved to Bahrain in the Middle East for a year. And then for 10th grade, I actually skipped, eighth grade. Okay. And started 9th grade in Bahrain, and then moved to Amsterdam, to the International School of Amsterdam for 10th grade, and then Hamburg, Germany again for 11th and 12th grade. I started college at the American College of Switzerland for 2 years in 1983. And in 85, I transferred to the University of Miami and then went on to get 2 Master of Science degrees in hotel management and then in accounting to start my career in New York City. also lived in Connecticut, Miami Beach, and then finally LA.
Okay, so you've taken quite a roundabout journey there to get to LA right now. And you've worked for a couple of large companies, but you're also an exceedingly successful entrepreneur. How did that come about?
So when I was pregnant with my first child, Zoe, in Connecticut, I was working for Ian Schrager Hotels or Morgan's Hotel Group in New York City. And I had already had several businesses at that point, and such as So Animation, in which I won 4 Telly Awards and 2 Emmy Awards. And I really enjoyed the feeling of independence and doing things the way I felt things should be done. So after I gave birth, from going from 60 to 80 hours in New York City to dedicating my time to my newborn, Zoe, I really surprised myself by handing in my resignation after my maternity leave, which I really didn't think I was going to do because I loved working so much. But a year later, while I was at home and pregnant with my second child, Coco, I realized that I still wanted to be an achiever outside of home life. And I thought the best way to do it was to be an entrepreneur, because it really gives you the freedom to both have a business and have a feeling, a sense of accomplishment, as well as, you know, have time for your family and really be able to be there at home as well. So that's when Neoteric Luxury Outdoor Collections was conceived in 2005. And I mean, I really love building businesses from scratch. It takes a lot of thought, planning, and implementation. And basically, you're in charge of whether it's going to be a success or not. You know, I love building spreadsheets. I mean, I can sit at a spreadsheet for 8 hours, like very happy.
I happen to know the feeling. Yes.
You know, just implementing all the systems that require business to work. And I really also enjoyed traveling, a little bit of a getaway, to our factories in Indonesia and the Philippines to supervise the manufacturing process, the production management, and quality control processes. So I enjoy the whole gamut of any business.
Okay, so that's business. It's pretty standard. You're an entrepreneur, a very successful entrepreneur. You had successful careers with a couple of large companies. And then you did something different. I believe it was in 2015, and it kind of had something to do with an Arabian horse.
Yeah. Yeah, actually in 2016, I went on one of those business trips to Dubai, and the conference center wasn't ready for the hotel show. The containers hadn't been unloaded, and I really didn't have anything to do. So I decided to do something that I used to love as a child, which was ride Arabian horses in the Arabian desert. So I took a cab there. Almost didn't have the right money because I had the wrong denomination with me. It's like different colors to pay the taxi driver and for the ride, but luckily I did. And that was one of those epiphany moments in my life. First of all, the 18-hour nonstop flight from LA to Abu Dhabi on Etihad is magical in my mind, flying over the Sahara Desert. And my best decisions in life and most important ones have been made 30,000 feet in the air, basically. And the ride itself made me realize what I truly enjoyed as a child, because I think that as women, we really lose who we are when we're mothers and business owners and we take care of everyone, including our partners or husbands, and we forget about ourselves. So that moment was sort of, I really remembered who Martina was again. And I named my Porsche 911 Firehorse, and I decided at that moment I'm going to become a race car driver.
Okay, so you decided to become a race car driver. How do you go about doing that? I mean, it's a totally male-dominated field. How did you break into it?
First of all, the driving roads in California are amazing. So what really prompted me to start going, this was a few times before I went to Dubai, is, you know, getting away and telling my ex-husband, you take care of the kids on Saturday morning. I'm getting up at 4:00. See you later. You feed them. I'm going to go. So that in and of itself was great, you know, to finally carve out some time for myself and drive up the 14 through the beautiful mountains to the desert. So driving up that mountain felt like I was leaving all my problems behind. And then getting to the track, which was the desert environment, which reminded me of riding and living in Bahrain. And then, you know, it's a competitive sport. It's a sport that's dominated, well, in which very few women participate. So I really, you know, enjoyed actually seeing myself improve. And then, of course, because I'm competitive, it became, okay, I want to be number one. I want to, you know, be faster than the guys and the girls. And then it became, I'm going to become a race car driver and become a three-time champion. So, you know, I think when you're competitive, it's sort of, you know, any competitive sport or situation kind of gets me going, and I love to compete.
Well, there you go. Yeah, race car driving. I mean, it must feel so fantastic. You're in charge. So you started talking about fear before when you were talking about when you were in Beirut and the war was going on, and you started talking about something that happened to you. I believe it was August 15th, 2019.
Yes.
Can you tell us exactly what happened?
Yeah, so last year, surprisingly to me, because I was a relative newcomer, I was approached by Celine, which is an American company, to drive their Celine S1 race car in the Celine Cup as part of the Blancpain GT World Challenge. And of course, I was like, yep, no problem. I'm going to do this. And then the first time I got in the car, I was paralyzed with fear. I mean, it really brought me to my knees, and I really had no idea what the problem was, because usually any situation I've had in the past, breaking my back, having a concussion, I get over things. There's no slacking off, like just get it done. But this situation was something I I mean, I was paralyzed. That was in June. And then July happened and I was still, you know, had a race. We went to China and performed in the Olympic Stadium. Okay, that was fine. But I needed to prepare for Watkins Glen, which was a huge deal for me. I'd never been to the track. And on August 15th of last year, I woke up and I told myself, what's wrong with you? I mean, why are you so fearful of this car? You need to get over it. And what is it? So I started driving up another beautiful road, the number 5, over the mountains. And it was in those mountains on the way to the desert that I realized that the sounds of the Celine reminded me of the sounds that I had heard during the war. It reminded me of the sounds of the gunfire, the bombs and explosions that I heard as a child. It's a turbocharged engine. And so it made all these like hissing and popping sounds that I wasn't familiar with. So I pulled over on the 5 in one of those hill resorts. And I said, I need to no longer sweep this fear under the rug. And I need to do something right now to deal with the fear. And so my belief is the way you deal with fear is you confront it head on. You can't just not confront it in order to get over the next fear that reminds you of it. So I pulled up a YouTube video of real war sounds. And for the next hour at full volume on the 5, it's called The Grapevine, I listened to the real sounds of war, bombs, rockets, and explosions going off. And I cried a little bit, had to fix my makeup before I got to the track. But the crying and the release and overcoming, remembering the sounds, remembering the fear of me crawling into my sister's bed, it all flooded back to me. And by listening to those sounds, it desensitized me. So by the time I got to the racetrack, I was able to get into the car and I had conquered my fear and I was able to drive the car so much more aggressively and more like my own car than I had before. And I actually went on to win 2 trophies, 2 podiums in 7 races. So yeah, confront your fears. That's my advice.
Well, that's one of the things. I know that you said you're a transformational coach, but aside from that, you're so passionate about inspiring young girls. Mm-hmm. Talk about how you're in a male-dominated profession right now. You talk about confronting your fears. You've mm-hmm. talked about the fact that you even went back and forced yourself. You knew what you needed to do. Not everyone could do that. So in inspiring these young people to be themselves, to go for it, what do you suggest? I mean, what are some of the obstacles that you see that young women, young girls have that you would like to help them, you know, that advice you can give them to move on, to do things that they thought they couldn't do?
Yeah, so goals are everything, and visualizing what you want is really, really powerful. So this will actually be the topic of another podcast I'm doing for school children that I was going to speak to at the Long Beach Grand Prix last week. For Racers Who Care. So it's a group of, I believe, 7 to 12-year-olds. Okay. So first, I think you need to dream about what you want. And by the way, daydreaming is a really effective technique to escape any traumatic situation, whether it's at home or me during the war in Beirut. So I became a really big daydreamer in Beirut, and it's helped me throughout life. When we lived in Hong Kong, I had met my dad's racehorses a few times. And ever since that moment until this day, horses, you know, have become my favorite animal. So in Beirut, what I would do to escape, you know, the war stuff, I would have a group of Barbies and their riding stable and barns. And, you know, it was like a whole farm setup. And I would daydream about the Barbies going on long rides in beautiful forests in somewhere far away. And when we had to leave Beirut, that's what I actually did. I became a horseback rider and my favorite activity was to go ride in the beautiful forests in Hamburg, Germany. Forests that I had never seen except for in my dream. So when you start dreaming about something, it becomes crystal clear in your head. You get to know exactly what you want. You know, what is the perfect scenario? You've already, you know, carved the road in your head, exactly how you're going to get there and what the end goal is going to be. So I've used this concept in building my award-winning businesses. I especially use it in becoming a three-time champion, because that's the hardest thing that I've done. So, you know, success, ultimately reaching goals, is not about the goal itself. It's about the road to get you there. It's about the number of hours, the hard work, the mental capacity you put in to get there. And you don't simply arrive at the top of Mount Everest. It takes years of training and mental toughness to get you there, and the unexpected occurrences that are thrown your way. And I think that's one of the most important things, how people deal with unexpected occurrences. So in life, you can never lose sight of the end goal. You need to be able to handle uncontrollable external variables, because they will happen. And you have to accept them with a rational mind and critical thinking. You can't get distracted by complaining or waste time making excuses, right? Instead, you have to find the solution, get back in the saddle, and continue with grit and determination towards your goals. So that would be my biggest piece of advice for anyone, really.
Well, you talked about adapting and being able to adapt to any kind of change. And that's something you have to do when you're driving a race car, the hairpin turns, the weather, on a dime or less than that, you have to be able to adapt. And I know that's one of the strongest sentiments that you have. So when we were talking about fear and the car and the sound of the car, but I want to go back once. I heard you talk about an incident that happened back in 2003. I believe it was when you were controller of one of the Ian Schrager hotels. What mm-hmm. happened and how did you react?
Oh my gosh. So I was the controller of the Paramount Hotel near Times Square. And so I was in charge of the finances, and I was in charge of reporting to corporate our cash flow situation, and basically in charge of taking care of the finances of the hotel. And so we did have some debt, and we had some cash flow issues, as a lot of hotels do. We always seem to manage, but on one day in 2003, the electricity suddenly went out. And here we are, our accounting office is on the top floor of the hotel, and I mean, my heart sank. I was mortified, thinking that, oh my gosh, the Con Edison bill didn't get paid and they switched off the electricity. You know, I mean, or the check bounced or something. So it was really one of the most mortifying moments in my entire career, until I found out that it was the Northeast blackout of 2003. So, but really it was one of those sinking into your seat kind of moments where, wow, I made this huge mistake, you know?
And you're experienced, you're successful, and even successful people have ideas that maybe they forgot to mail the check in. It's a testament to the fact that just because you're successful and have a title and you're up there doesn't mean that you're not going to think that you made a mistake or maybe make a mistake. You know, okay, so it was a blackout and you had paid the bill. That's all good. You've also talked about the three parts to success. You want to mention what you believe the three parts to success are?
Perseverance, dedication, and belief in oneself. So, I mean, success can be defined in so many different ways. And when you come from certain cultures, like I'm half German and half Chinese, you know, having a German father and a German mother and Chinese father, success means being number one. Like there's no number two. Number two is not an option. So that kind of adds a certain amount of pressure when you're growing up. But I really didn't care as much in high school about success as when I started college. So that's when something clicked. And then success became for me to become the top of my class, you know, in each college and university I went to. after that, you know, success became getting a job at one of the top accounting firms in the world, KPMG. Done, accomplished. Then success became becoming a top performer in the top companies that I worked for. So there was always this drive to be the best, to be number one, to achieve things in whatever I was attempting. And after I worked for other companies, success became becoming an award-winning entrepreneur in any business I founded. And then finally at 50, success became becoming a three-time champion race car driver. So I think it means setting goals. Success means setting goals that are higher than you ever imagined you can achieve, right? Set your goals high. Surround yourself with people who are far more successful than you are. So you're going to try and reach. It's kind of like playing tennis with a partner who's much better than you. It really brings your game up, right? You really try harder. But I also think the thing about you have to be a little obsessive compulsive to be successful, a perfectionist, if you will. And but consumes you in ways you've never imagined, or it did me, total type A personality. And sometimes it's to the detriment of others. But I think the most important thing about, you know, aside from perseverance, is believing in yourself, yes, right? Yes, you have to know without a shadow of a doubt that you can do it, right? And every success that you've achieved along the way helps you achieve the next success. So yeah, success is obviously an important part of the vocabulary here.
Well, I've heard you say that you found the love of your life. Now, you also just recently, just a few seconds ago, mentioned that you found race car driving when you were 50, when you were in your 50s. And yeah. I mean, my belief is you could try anything, anytime. There's always a new journey. So when did you find the love of your life, and how has that changed everything?
So I found Dwayne Dement a few years ago. And of course, there are different kinds of love, like for our family, our friends, and of course, my children. But falling in love with him really changed my life. It's an incredibly beautiful and comforting feeling to finally find the one. We had both been in unhappy relationships before where we felt like things were missing. And, you know, when I met him, I actually met him. He was my race coach way before we fell in love. And then a few years ago, about 2.5 years ago, we started talking about horses. And I realized that not only was he a race car driver, but we shared the same passion for horses. And, you know, I fell in love with him for so many reasons. But, you know, the thing for me is I've never respected a man more. And I've always considered myself a really strong woman. He's so intelligent. He's such a critical thinker. He's such a hard worker. I mean, I respect how especially upright and honest he is as a businessman, which I find very important to be ethical. He's a superb race car driver and horseman. And we're so alike in so many ways, but I think the most important thing is we understand each other. And I've never, ever felt as understood by another human being as by him. So my heart fills with joy when I think of him. You know, one week I'm with the kids and then the other week I'm with him. And I'm going to spend the rest of my life with him. And the thing is, you know, we were both in our 50s when we met, and we're in our 50s now. And so there's anything is possible at any age, and miracles do happen.
There you go. I fully agree. I've lived that life. So yes. So now what's next? What's your next journey? What are you up to?
Well, I've always had male mentors in my career. And so I feel like now it's time to inspire women and kids. So one of the ventures is Dwayne and I are starting a new racing school, high performance driving academy, and teen car control clinic at his new facility at Willow Springs, which is our favorite racetrack, 90 miles from LAX. And, but I'm especially excited about the teen car control clinic because Zoe and Coco are now 14 and 16. So Zoe's going to start taking driving lessons soon. And I feel like a lot of teens drive unsafely, especially when the summer starts and you see more and more teens drive. So it's really my passion and goal to help the kids become safer drivers and more aware of situations and how to handle them. And I feel like if they are aware of different things that can happen and how to respond to them, there'll be far few accidents and far few tragedies. So that's one of my passions right now. And I'm also going to start a podcast soon called Daring to Be Different, which is kind of my slogan. And finally, but not, you know, last but not least, I'm really excited to share my vision with women who are over 40 in my transformational group coaching program. So my goal is to help women who are 40 plus, who are exhausted from working for others and building someone else's dream, to becoming an unstoppable entrepreneur. And the program's 8 weeks, and I want to help them start creating six-figure incomes, you know, right away. So that program is being developed and will be completed this month. So I'll be starting a Facebook group surrounding women over 40 who want to be unstoppable entrepreneurs. And I really want to help inspire and teach women, you know, what I've learned, my vision, and how you build a business from scratch and just have no fear in doing it. Fear nothing, be you, dare to be different, and take things to the next level, you know, envision your dream.
Well, I will repeat it. I totally agree. It's never too late to start something. It's never too late to dream. And it's never too late to find true love and fall in love. Martina, I thank you so much for being here today. This has been such a pleasure.
Thank you so much. It's really been a pleasure. I'm honored to be on your show, Sylvia.
Thank you for joining me today. On our next podcast, I'll be talking to another extraordinary, inspiring woman who has made her mark on the world. You can find us on your favorite podcast platform and, of course, our website, sylviaandme.com. Don't forget to hit the subscribe button to keep up with the latest episodes. Review, rate, and take us with you wherever you are. I want to hear from you. If you know of an extraordinary, inspiring woman, please contact me at sylvia@lifeofprey.com. You can also follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Today's podcast is sponsored by Upper Deck, the national full-service virtual gym that has reinvented the at-home workout experience. Upper Deck has more than 30 strength and cardio classes a week. Named Best Fitness Club in the Gold Coast for 2020, Upper Deck brings the gym to you with live coaching and motivation. Upper Deck's unique classes are interactive. They have two coaches, one leading your workout and one keeping her eyes on you, providing feedback and encouragement in real time. For a free week of unlimited virtual classes with no strings attached, email info@upperdeckfitness.com and let Upper Deck know you're a Sylvia and Me listener. Stay safe. This has been a Life of Prey production.